Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Deal in Texas, I think it was 8 duplexes that you guys actually put under contract and closed on now. Yep. And you just wanted to share with us looking at a deal in a creative way.
Yep.
And not just focusing necessarily on the financing of that deal, but just looking at it creatively will open up some other avenues. Is that right, Jeff?
That is right. So this one's not going to be necessarily about creative financing, but how you're looking at a deal and the different ways that you can look at it so you can try to create a solution.
Okay. Well, let's dive into it. Tell us about it. So this was a deal in College Station, Texas.
Yes.
And I think we talked about this a little bit on another episode.
Yeah, I think we mentioned it.
Give us the specifics. How did you guys find it? And just walk us through the negotiation and kind of where you kind of discovered these other avenues, I guess.
So I run a meetup, and we encourage people to work with us, so to joint venture with us, whether they bring a deal that's already under contract or something that maybe needs to still be structured. And so I ran a meetup, I think it was only maybe 2 months ago, I think. And someone stayed late and said, hey, I found a deal in Texas. We don't work in Texas, but we always look for deals. So if it was a single family home, I don't know that I would have really wanted to joint venture up. I would have helped try to structure the deal, but this was a much bigger deal. And we're always looking for that. Apartments, mobile home parks, you know, something.
Yeah, commercial stuff.
Yeah. So he said that he had found it on LoopNet. So, you know, not like he went, you know, track down
for
sellers,
right? Yeah.
And it turned out that it was listed, which is, you know, already like a couple strikes against you. Just begin, not that I have anything against realtors, but we're always looking for off-market deals.
Yeah.
Okay. So he brought it to me, and he didn't have a lot of information. He had, they had sent him some, and I just quick and dirty. I mean, he did not have it under contract, but so there were 8 duplexes. These are student housing type duplexes, so they're a block and a half away from a major university, and they're 4 bedroom, 3.5 bath units. Okay, and really the best and highest use for it would be to rent to students. And just knowing what I do, which is not a tremendous amount about student housing, that typically you can get like $400 to $550 per room, depending on the market and the property.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, so let's think about this. You know, and immediately I'm like, all right, so what do they rent for? And the rents were very screwed up. And when I say screwed up, there was some vacancies. There was one unit, so 4 bedrooms, that was renting for $500 total. Not the $2,000 that, you know, they should have been getting.
Uh-huh.
There were units that were rented for $1,100. There was something going on here, but we didn't know what it was yet. And they had this listed for $2.8 million. Okay, so if you think about $2.8 million and you divide it by 8, So they were asking about $350,000 per duplex, okay. Which is probably not a bad deal for these, but the income was messed up. And if you're dealing with student housing, you only have a certain window of opportunity to get them rented for
leased
out to students.
Yeah.
So otherwise you're screwed. And that's exactly what happened to these people that were involved, the owners. So he brought it, and so I just started working up numbers, like, super quick. We didn't have a whole lot, and I basically worked it up as a commercial deal. And commercial deal would be that, you know, that you've got to take into account a lot more expenses.
Yeah.
So you're going to take into a vacancy, a property management, utility costs, taxes, insurance.
Capital expense savings.
And by the way, the taxes in Texas... these were running each unit $8,500 a year. So
wow.
It's like $700+ a month in taxes. Apparently Texas is a no state tax, so they get you on property tax. So and certainly that's something that you want to know when you're dealing in a market that you're not familiar with.
Yeah, because that's a huge expense.
Well, in Utah, that same property, the tax might be $2,000 to $2,400, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge difference. So,
right.
So you want to include all of the expense. So, you know, commercial would probably run anywhere from like 35 to 50% expense-wise compared to, you know, pro forma income. So, what the income could be. And so immediately I'm like, all right, so let's just take half of what the income is. And I'm like, oh, you know, they're asking too much. And, but we started talking and he had thrown out some numbers, like some low, low numbers. Like I think he started at like 2 million or 2.1, something like that. And they weren't interested, but they said they might be interested in some creative financing. There wasn't any definite, and remember, this is through the realtor that probably didn't necessarily go to the seller and find out that that was the case. But, and I don't remember exactly what happened, but he was able to give me some details, and I thought, I bet that they owe like $2.2 million on this or $2.3 million. And this loan, and he had gotten this information that their underlying loan was at 4%. And I'm like, that's a good loan for commercial property.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how do we figure out a way to use that loan and offer them, you know, more money? Because we weren't going to pay 2.8. So he came to me, and initially I'm like, yeah, it's not a deal. But then we kept talking, and I got a little better idea that, hey, and I was making assumptions. I did not know this, but I'm like, wait a minute. If they owe that much, that we probably don't have to give them that much money up front, so we can get in as a down payment that would be very reasonable. And the underlying terms were super good. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that could be a deal. So I decided, all right, we need to gather more information. So I had him call the realtor, and there's two partners. One partner was very interested in the terms. One partner was not, and he was the controlling partner. Okay. So I put together an LOI, and I never got like, what's the principal balance of the loan? And with commercial loans, they typically have balloon payments.
Right.
So I did not know how long the term may be. So I made some assumptions. And so I put together, I don't know, I think there was three offers, maybe four, including a cash offer. And the cash offer was low. It was like 2.2 maybe. And the other offers were, you know, over 2.5. So, and they were going to make some money, you know, some cash flow. So, I got some feedback. So my joint venture partner eventually put me in touch with the realtor, and I had some conversations, and then I made the offers. So I sent him over an LOI. And they came back, and he said one partner he loved the owner financing deals. If it were up to him, he would take it. The other guy was, no, we got to get cashed out. And what I learned was that there were some private investors that had made the loan to him, and things were not going as planned. They had owned this property for maybe 3 years, and they started out okay, but you could see that there were some property management issues.
Yeah.
The vacancy rate kept going up, and these properties were, from a couple of some feedback from the realtor, I was told that they were in excellent condition. So I'm like, okay. And so we sent over the LOI, and they countered, not with the owner financing, with cash. And we ended up, I'm trying to think, what did we end up at? We ended up at 2.410, I believe,
okay,
million dollar cash price, which would put these at about $300,000 a piece, right? So we actually put it under contract for that. And let me tell you why. So initially, I had no interest in buying these. The goal was to create financing with a small amount of money down, and we would wholesale it. Now the goal was that I also wanted to wholesale it, but now it was going to be for cash. And we don't really have a lot of buyers in Texas. We could reach out. We have some contacts, but that's not where we work.
Right.
And it's cash. And, now we're trying to sell this thing for $2.6 million or something like that. That's a decent amount of money,
yeah,
for, someone to come together in 30 days or less.
Right.
And they were not willing to give a whole lot of time for due diligence. They told me, which is craziness, I asked for, I think it was 30 days due diligence and a 10-day close. And
yeah,
I thought that was extremely fair.
Yeah, and with commercial properties, isn't it like a 60-day due diligence?
Can be,
isn't that typical?
Yeah, I mean, it can be anywhere from 30 to 60 or 90 days even, depending on the project, and then usually another 30 days to close.
Right.
But they would not budge, okay? And I'm like, all right, fine. We'll take that. But the realtor told me that's unheard of. Usually it's a 10-day due diligence. I'm like, yeah, on maybe a single family home, but
right.
we've got 8 duplexes, and I wanted to see all the rent rolls, the trailing 12, the expenses for the last 12 months, and they were a mess. I mean, this wasn't very straightforward, but I did some research, and really what the issue was is they had some property management issues, and you could tell that they were trying to plug holes just to bring in income, and that if you could fix the property management issues, that you could probably fix this project. So we did a little research, and what we felt was that after repaired value for each unit would be 400,000-ish. When I say ish, there was a great comp, same street, that had sold for 403 like in the last 30 days, that was bringing in $3,500 a month income.
Yeah,
so
that's a pretty good comp.
Yeah, so we figured that's the minimum, because if we're getting 4,000, that maybe it's worth 4.25 in that vicinity. But we're basing everything on, they're worth 400,000. So we tried to wholesale them, so we put it under contract. Meanwhile, we found someone to walk through a few of the units, and
you did find out indeed that they are in excellent condition.
Well, at that time, because we only got through 3 units that were basically vacant. So when I say 3 units, 3 sides of a unit.
Okay.
And yes, those 3 were in excellent condition. And the realtor told us those were the worst 3 that there were.
Okay.
Okay. So we were basing, we made some assumptions based on this. And so people had started showing interest in, you know, hey, that's a good deal. But we were trying to wholesale them. And what I was finding out real quick is that not a lot of people have either 2.6-ish million laying around or have access to it super quick in a market that they're just not
familiar with. Yeah, makes sense.
Okay, so we were starting to run out of time. And so I went back to the realtor and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to cancel my contract. And he's like, what? Why? And I'm like, to be honest, there are a lot of unknowns and I've asked for information and the information that I've gotten back has been incomplete. And it's too big of a deal to jump into without having all the information. And I just kind of feel pressured. And he's like, what if I could work this out? What if I could work that out? I'm like, maybe. He's like, is there a price that you could come back at? And I'm like, yep, there is. So I said, I come in at 2.2 million. And so it was like a $210,000 discount that I was asking for. And the seller was super irritated with me, which is, I don't know. It seemed really odd. It seemed like everything, by the way, there was this portion of this deal that I, to this minute, I can't understand. So I put up earnest money, okay, uh-huh. 20,000. And so we had to send that money in, which, you know, everyone understands what earnest money is. It shows your intent that you're for real. And that, hey, it's fully refundable during the due diligence period.
Right.
Because I'm going off of very little information.
Yeah.
But I want to show you I'm serious. But if I find out that you've been lying to me or it's not exactly how it's been portrayed, I'm doing my homework and I get my money back.
Right.
For some reason in Texas, perhaps just with commercial properties, In the REPC, so this must be fairly standard, they get, it's called an option fee. And this is in addition to your earnest money deposit. And it was like $1,000. And I asked so many questions about this because I've never heard of this. So you pay $1,000 and it goes directly to the seller. And it's non-refundable. And it's... So the seller will take the property off the market and know that you're serious. And I said, 20,000 doesn't make me serious. And he's like, if you don't pay this option fee and you cancel your contract, even during the due diligence period, he doesn't have to give back your earnest money. I'm like, how is that possible? And so I ended up having to pay $1,000, non-refundable, to give myself that 30-day due diligence time to make my earnest money refundable. So wow,
that's interesting.
One of the things is make sure you read your contracts because I've never seen that before.
And yeah, that's very interesting.
I mean, I made him go through the ringer. I'm like, I don't understand this.
So yeah. You got to pay him $1,000 just to have the option to get your earnest money back should you cancel under due diligence.
Correct.
Wow.
Okay. So now the seller came back, okay, and they countered my, and they said, we will not come down one more penny if you can do something at 2.285. So they came down $125,000 more dollars, which, you know.
It's pretty significant.
It's $30,000 a piece. So I'm like, okay, so, but they were not willing to give me any more time. And
no more due diligence.
The due diligence was fine, but now they were trying to move up my closing. So it was literally my due diligence ran out like the day of closing. So I wasn't really at risk. So I was trying to get something done all the way up till the end. And one of the things that I realized, and here's the creative part really, is that even though they were selling these as a package, so you couldn't just, you know, they wanted to sell them all together, and they're all right next to one another, but they're all on separate tax ID numbers.
Yeah, separate parcel numbers. Yeah.
So I put in the contract that I, as the buyer, have the option to convert this one purchase agreement for all eight to seven, because two were on the same tax ID, all the rest were separate.
Okay.
To seven individual purchase agreements. Why would I want to do that?
So you can wholesale one-off duplexes.
Correct. Or wouldn't it be a lot easier to get financing on one?
One or two, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that there, and I at this point I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I want to keep my options open. And one of the things that I started to think about is either wholesaling, so now I could sell them individually, just like you said, or I could get them financed individually. Now, if we were going to buy it and it was all one deal, that means we've got to raise the $2.285 million, right?
Yeah.
And what would they be secured by? All eight properties, right? On one
trusted
note.
Yeah.
Right. One note. So I need one investor, which I thought is, I mean, it's possible, but I don't have lots of time.
Yeah.
So what I was thinking is, if we were to buy it and I could separate them out, I guess one of the other things before we move on is that, so I would either need one investor or I would need to syndicate and pool people together, but I just didn't have time to do this, right? But if I needed $285 per deal on a property that's worth $400, do you think I'm in the range? I'm in the range, right?
Right.
So by having that clause in it, we actually did convert them to seven purchase agreements. And what we did is we found investors that now could lend on each unit rather than the entire project. So in reality, I could have brought in seven different investors. We didn't. I think we brought in three.
Okay.
But they funded all eight properties.
Yeah.
So that's the, when we started talking about this particular episode, one is, the only reason we got involved in this is because I was thinking
that they were open to terms.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, and even when I like did the numbers really quick and down and dirty, I'm like, oh, it's not a deal. And, but I was intrigued by, you know, anytime that you can take over debt and, you know, good debt and for little money up front, I'm like, all right, you know, that might be interesting.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I realized, wait a minute, this is a better deal than what I thought. And then they took cash and I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to raise the money, but I'm like, up front, I'm always trying to think what could go wrong and how could I fix it?
Yeah.
So immediately I thought it would be easier to wholesale these individually and it would be easier for us to finance them individually rather than as a whole. Now, if they were all on one tax ID number, that's not a choice. So sometimes it's about, hey, and I did. I asked specifically. I'm like, so are these all on separate tax ID numbers? And the realtor told me they're all on except for two. And I'm like, that might be the key to this whole thing. Yeah. And it turned out it was.
Right.
So even though we're not talking creative financing, this deal doesn't happen unless I think a little bit creatively and outside of the box, because we ended up buying it. And what our goal is now is we're just going to lease them. So we've hired a property manager and, you know, the leases would start in August 1st, the new school year. And if we're able, we should get $2,000 a side of the duplex, $4,000 total. and then we will go and just retail it. So we'll hold these for, you know, hopefully 6 months, and then we're going to put them all on the market at retail and try to sell them for the highest price possible. But remember, we're in it for like $285. It did turn out that, and this is why you do your research, so we did a walkthrough on all the rest of the units. So they sent over rent rolls, expenses. I'm telling you, lies, lies, lies. I saw these leases, and I'm like, I had all these questions. I sent all these questions back to the realtor. Like, I see that two tenants have dogs. How many dogs are in the two? Nope. We found one tenant that had four. these three units that you walked through are the worst. Nope, they weren't, as we walked through all the rest. Only one of the units is the owner paying utilities for. I'm like, what's $5,300 for internet? I'm like, that seems like it's for the year for all more the than units. Yeah, more yeah. than one unit. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They're paying internet. It's like, so always do your homework. I mean, especially if you're contemplating potentially funding this, you better know what you're getting. Oh, and two of the tenants were on housing.
Oh, were they?
But all the leases I saw did not say that. But do I really want people on housing in my student housing development?
No.
I mean, that will send people away.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you're just not going to get market rent for that.
Right. Exactly.
If you can rent each room out for $500 a piece.
Yep. Yeah. And by the way, so I did my homework. I contacted a number of property managers. I talked to people in that area, other investors. I wanted to get an idea of the area, the market, the potential rents, what were some of the potential issues. But it's just going to be super hard to lose on this deal. And by the way, my company, put up $0. So we're involved, including our joint venture partner that brought the deal to us. But the upside for us is everything, and the downside for us is basically nothing.
Yeah, because you're utilizing other people's money.
Yep. So, which is another way of creatively looking at how can I acquire or be a part of real estate without all the risk.
Yeah, and see, when we were talking about this deal on the phone, Jeff, you didn't want to bring this on the podcast because it was a cash deal and you didn't think it was creative, but seemed to convince you that it was pretty creative.
You did.
Because of these things, because you were able to look at the deal in another way and say, hey, can we have a separate purchase agreement for each parcel number? That's very creative. That allows you to find other investors that will, fund one or two, and that's what you guys did. So, because the other part of this is your partners that you found to buy it and not using any of your own money. So let's get into that a little bit. Did you get your earnest money back? And then how did you structure the financing? What partner bought how many, so on and so forth?
So what we did, one, the only earnest money I didn't get back is that $1,000 option fee. Okay. So we put down $20,000, but we canceled the contract. Okay. Because we now were bringing in two partners, and so we formed a new LLC, and we wanted to write up seven contracts as opposed to the one. So we canceled it, and we said, if you can get all this done, then we'll buy it. But we're not sending any more earnest money. We're planning on closing in 3 days. So they said, all right, which is great. So there was no earnest money in it. We brought on two partners, so we literally raised this money in 48 hours.
So you guys did cancel the contract, just to clarify here. Yep. You guys canceled the initial contract you had.
Yep.
They returned your earnest money.
Yep.
And then just by negotiating with the agent, you said, hey, we can take it for this price.
So,
and that was the...
Yeah, so what we did is when I renegotiated the price, okay, We thought we had even another partner that was going to come in and try to strong arm them for even a bigger discount, but I knew that it wasn't going to happen. We were at the bottom price, and you know, that I think they had like a pending balloon payment coming due, and they didn't want to deal with their lenders. So they really were motivated to get this done, but at the same time, they had reached their bottom price. They were not going down. So when I canceled the contract, they were not willing to give us any more time. They were willing to give us a new price. So I was trying to create some potential, you know, if we don't buy it, they don't have a buyer right now. And, you know, they're looking at minimum, at least another 30, 40, 50, 60 days.
Yeah, just to find a buyer.
Right. So I canceled the contract. We requested our earnest money. And that's when the realtor came back and was like, well, I can get you this and I can get you that. And that's when I made a new offer. And then they accepted the offer, but they weren't willing to give any more time. And I said, well, this is what we can do. And they said, okay. So we literally then raised the money in 48 hours. So we had two partners. And here's how we found these two partners. One was a relative of my partner. And one was someone that we met through a mastermind that lives in Texas.
Okay.
Both of them did walkthroughs for us on the property. So as soon as they saw it, they're like, how do I get involved? And it's like, so we weren't really anticipating them getting involved, but when it came down to it, it's like, all right, you know, we're either going to buy it or we're going to let it go at this point. We said, hey, here's the deal. So you raise the money, we'll bring you in as a partner, and you know, here's what the goal will be, and as long as everyone's on the same page. And so one guy raised like $1.2 million and the other one $1.3 something, the other one $1 million, like immediately. And then those investors are secured on each property. So you couldn't invest unless you were coming with $285,000+. And if you wanted to invest more, you had to come with twice as much. So we could secure you with one property for your money, because we weren't syndicating this. It was all one lender, one property.
Uh-huh.
So all came together. There were some issues. It actually got extended because, yeah, we did this walkthrough. We're like, wait a minute. They also told us that all the roofs had been redone.
Uh-huh.
They all were, but one. And they neglected to tell us that. Okay. So they ended up eating like another $6,500 at closing to compensate us for that. And there were a few other little... there's always, you know, potential issues trying to close something of this magnitude that quickly. Especially when, you know, we're not there, even though we had both of our new partners there. Everyone was in a rush. So, uh-huh. But I think that the reason that I'm happy that we discussed this is that truly creative financing is about trying to diagnose what's going on with a particular property or a particular owner, and then trying to solve a problem. In this case, it didn't turn out to be creative financing. However, creative financing got me involved in it. Didn't work out that way. And if you then start thinking about what still are some of the issues, diagnosing what are some of the problems or potential issues, and you think through them and you come up with solutions creatively. Now we have a pretty good size. We're not making the whole enchilada. So, you know, initially, you know, there was probably $800,000+ in this deal. We won't get all that, but we'll get a piece.
Yeah.
And
you don't have any of your money in it.
None.
Yeah.
And well, to be honest, no risk either.
Yeah. So you guys put the all the properties in an LLC.
Yes.
And who are the members of that LLC? Is it your other investors or it just...
So it's our entity and two other entities, the two people that brought all the investors.
So they have ownership that way, plus their money is secured by mortgages on the property.
Yeah, so everyone that put up money has a trust deed and note based on the collateral of that.
So they're kind of double secured because they're on title, or at least they're a member of the LLC that owns title. And they have and their money secured by
actually they may not be the only investor, so they went and found individual investors to put up the money.
Okay,
so
they went on title with you, but they might be using other people's money as well.
Right,
and those their other people's money is just secured with a note on the property in first position.
Yeah.
So, do they do mortgages down there in Texas or trust deeds?
Trust deeds.
Trust deeds. Okay, yep. So they're secured by first position trust deeds on the property.
Yep. At least I think it's trust deed. I'm pretty sure it is. Yes.
See, I think the way that was financed is just creative in itself, because you're like, hey, you found partners and you put it in an LLC. You gave those partners ownership through the LLC, And then they raised the capital from their investors.
What would have even been better, and this probably could have been worked out if we had just a little more time, is that it would have been ideal if our two partners brought all the money, or we worked out with our two partners, hey, you can be a partner, but all the people that you bring, you're going to pay them whatever fee out of your proceeds.
Uh-huh.
It didn't work out that way. So we're paying whatever people have lent other than our partners a fee for lending that money. Now, there's still income coming in from this property. There's still like $17,000 a month coming in, which is not, I mean, the pro forma should be more like $32,000. So, but, you know, after taxes, you know, whatever, some maintenance, there still may be some cash flow. So, you know, there may be some ways to either pay some of the lenders or accumulate some money so that they can be paid later.
So these other lenders, is it kind of like hard money that they put up on those terms?
So these were all people that our two other partners know personally.
Uh-huh.
So they're not hard money lenders.
Per se. Okay.
But they're getting a good return on investment for, you know, 6 to 9 months.
Gotcha.
But not hard money rates, but not conventional rates.
So are they taking points on it?
Yeah.
They took points.
So
what
they do is they're getting like a certain fee based on what we sell. So they're getting like an equity piece. Which will translate into basically, you know, maybe 1 point and like 10-11% interest, something like that, 9%, something to that effect.
Pretty
close. And if we make a little more, they get a little more.
Yeah. So, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to update us on the progress of this when you guys do sell it. And we'll have to do another episode on this because this is so interesting. And I'd love to hear about it, what you guys made, what your partners made. And I'm very curious now as to that equity split that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to talk about that too. But we're kind of out of time on this one. But thanks, Jeff, for sharing that with us. Guys, sure. I hope what you guys really got out of this is just opportunity or at least taking action leads to opportunity, because that's really what you did here, Jeff. And then it kind of got creative the way it all came together and was structured. But you were interested just because of the because you heard that they were interested in seller finance, and so
with 4% interest.
Yeah, with that debt, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So guys, just how would you summarize the lesson there, Jeff?
So always look at things, don't always look at things like, don't judge the book by its cover. Especially, yeah, if this was a single family house, yeah, I'd probably be like, I'll help you try to structure something, but you know, we don't really want to partner. So what I would say to you is that it's always about how you look at things. And when I look at a particular lead, you know, in my mind, I'm like, how can I make this work? Can I make everything work? No. But I want to at least have exhausted, you know, the options before I say dead.
Yeah.
And because sometimes it's like, and it doesn't always just appear. Sometimes you got to think about it. Maybe you got to talk to some other investors or friends about it. But I like to look at things and keep an open mind and still try to figure out what can I do with this somehow to make some money.
Yeah. So. Awesome. Okay, guys. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I certainly have. I love bigger creative deals like this, you know, commercial deals, just because there's a bigger spread to make. And, you know, you spend about, you know, you probably spend a little more time on this than you would a single family home or triplex, fourplex. Yeah. But yep. There's also a bigger payday, bigger reward, and you're doing something bigger. So that's what I love about it. Guys, if you want to reach us on our hotline, you can leave comments there. If you guys have a question or a specific deal you're wondering how to structure, we can put you on the show, and we can run this by Jeff and see what kind of creative ways he would structure this. Anyway, that's that hotline number is 877-409-8090. Again, 877-409-8090. And then our website, where we keep all of our podcasts, are www.thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. Till next time, guys, create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.